is Marius.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. It's the mini show for the month of March 2022. You guys, baseball is back.
Oh my, just today.
Hours ago at time of recording, they apparently have a deal.
To have a full season, no less, right?
I think...
No missed games.
I have not looked at any details yet. I haven't had time to break down the details. But the point is, baseball is back, and I'm really looking forward to this weekend because I am hoping for just a flurry of free agent signings and trades and all the fun stuff that you expect out of an off-season just condensed into this scramble period before they have to report for spring training. It's going to be so much fun.
Let me ask you a question about this. But if this was certainly not going to happen, it is going to happen, but if this was not going to happen and the season was just canceled, would you follow college baseball?
No, probably not.
No.
No, because there's a lot of, like, I'd have to relearn, like, names and stuff. I don't want to do that. It's way too much
effort. I just don't know if you'd be jonesing so hard for, you know, for your beloved cocaine that you would start using crack.
No, I do have other hobbies, one of which is Nintendo games, which is why we're here. But no, like, I kind of...
do an entire season of whatever the most recent available baseball game is on the Switch.
There's a difference between cocaine and crack. I thought they're the same thing.
Mm-hmm. No, crack is
an something else. Product, yeah. I don't know, Ask your average coworker
at Target. Well, there's an difference between, I think the distinction is a bit more exaggerated or distinct. There's a difference between like heroin and morphine, but they're both opioids.
Mm. You
know? Oxycodone and Oxycontin is a difference. Fentanyl and, you know, children's aspirin.
Yeah, John's done them all.
I mainline that children's aspirin. Yeah, no, yes. Microdosing that shit. Yeah. But yeah, baseball. I'm so happy.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
This is exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Mm-hmm. But I have some video games to talk about. Wes, you got some games too?
I got DOS games.
You got anything, Ryan?
Not really, no.
Okay.
I've seen a movie, I guess, I could talk about.
Cool.
You guys may want to see it and me not spoil it.
Okay. Oh, we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. I want to kick us off with some Nintendo Switch games, because I've been playing a few. I finished Far Changing Tides, and you guys saw a little bit of this as I was playing with it. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, just as the general 30,000-foot view, this is a game where it's like, it's just about getting your ship that you are riding in from the left side of the screen over to the right side of the screen. You're just kind of proceeding along. Every once in a while, you will get hit with an obstacle, and sometimes the obstacle brings you to a complete halt. You have to leave the ship and, you know, swim down under the water to find a way to move the obstacle, or like climb up a cliff for some to find a way to get your ship relocated so that you can get past it. And a lot of that has to do with some really simple puzzle solving, you know, find the correct order to hit the switches in order to move the thing out of the way. Sometimes those puzzles can be a little bit unclear or a little bit obtuse about what things you can actually interact with. Most of the time, though, and I'd say like 90% of the time, it's like a blue glowing thing. That's, you know, something that you know you can grab onto or push or pull or activate or something like that. It's only like every once in a while that, you know, I had to look at somebody else playing the game like, I have no idea what I'm even supposed to try to interact with here. So, thankfully, there was someone else who was playing the game at the same time and had a few of the same stumbling blocks that I had. I just didn't have it in me to stare at the game. Like, I'll fast forward to the point where he figured it out, so I'll go from there. But I only had to do that one or two times.
That's good.
Yeah, and like...
just in terms of its vibe, it's got like that, you know, 2.5D thing going, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. it's like always in, is it always in that static pose, or they break out of that and give you other puzzles to solve?
They give you other puzzles to solve, and usually when you are doing things like getting out, like trying to get an obstacle out of the way of your ship, you are leaving the ship and having to interact with some other things in order to, you know, clear the path, as it were. That's not to say, like, when you're on the ship, it's all smooth sailing. Every once in a while, they'll do something hit you with a storm, or your ship will take some damage, so you have to kind of multitask. Like, okay, I can get both my engines running, but this one's over, my engine is overheating, so I gotta, you know, use my hose to cool it off. And now, like, something has knocked my sails over, so I gotta climb back to the top of the ship and redeploy the sails. And, you know, you would only really use both your sail and your you know, steam engine at the same time.
If you were...
Yeah, right. When you want to take it off some sweet jumps.
Yeah. Can you do, like, kickflips with it?
You'd only really do it if you're, like, really in a hurry. Otherwise, you know... I really like the moments when in the game where you've had to do something that, you know, you've had to weather a storm, or, you know, you've had to go underwater and do some puzzle solving for a while, and then they give you these stretches where for like 2 or 3 minutes you're just able to deploy your sails and watch the thing go. They give you these really rewarding moments where you don't really have to do anything. Which I think is really cool because it gives the game a super chill vibe. It's not a long game. Like 4 hours and I was done with it. Yeah. So.
Where would you put this in? Let's say I give you 3 games and give me your order. It's going to be like Inside, Little Nightmares, or Far.
That's tough because, I mean, they're very different.
It's funny because...
Really, are they though? The only thing is that this one doesn't seem like it's got a lot of stuff that's going to try to kill you.
Right. It doesn't have the violence. It's not as grotesque. And actually, you know, the visual style is very very chill. It's almost low poly, as like especially in the background and stuff. Like it's not low res, but some of the animations and the set pieces that are going on in the background almost look like something you'd see in like a PS1 or an N64. And I don't think it's a shortcoming of the game. I think they made a deliberate choice about the visual style. But, you know, in terms of where I would put it, like in that style of game, the sort of like 2D, like puzzle solving is the primary game mechanic sort of game. I like Little Nightmares the best just because of the really grotesque art style, the constant sense of danger. And, you know, something like an Inside or a Limbo also has that constant sense of danger where you're going to get brutally murdered at any point. But I kind of like this more than that, you know, for the reason that you're not going to get brutally murdered at any point. But it's kind of a conundrum because you can get brutally murdered in Little Nightmares.
Yes.
So
everything is made of sausage in that world.
Right, overstuffed sausage. it is a grotesque game. But yeah, I mean, like, I think it fits in within that same style where, you know, you're not doing a ton of like actual platforming, you're not like engaging in any sort of combat. It's just, you know, what is the procedure that you need to execute in order to continue going? But yeah, I liked it. I think the previous game, I guess, in this series, I guess it is now because there's 2 games, was Far Lone Sails. And I think I like that one a little bit better. And that might have just because it was a novel concept at the time. Whereas this one is trying to take that same thing and build off of it. And they do that by giving you a boat that can submerge underwater and give you like a more of a freedom to navigate in multiple directions. Whereas Lone Sails was just about, like, you're going to be on the ground the whole time. You're basically in a car. It's a big tank with wheels on it.
Just keep going, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And by the way, no more of all of those games, no situation makes you feel more helpless than Inside being underwater.
Mm.
Like,
yeah.
All of those underwater segments in Inside were just torture.
Right? Because you couldn't get out.
You're so fucking slow. And then there's the creepy spider woman.
Right, and the thing that chases you. Yeah.
Yeah.
The game was creepy. It was good. But yeah. Wes, tell me about Elden Ring.
Not yet. Okay. I was going to talk about Ghost of Tsushima first.
Okay, tell me about Ghost of Tsushima then.
So I started playing this one, and then a couple weeks later, Elden Ring came out. And mm-hmm. I was sad that I started Ghost. Because Elden Ring is a lot better.
You just started Ghost? I thought you'd... Didn't you already own that game, though?
I did, but I was sitting on it for a while because things kept popping up and I hadn't gotten around to it. I mean, I just got to Act 2, and I believe there's like 3 acts if I remember correctly. I could be wrong, completely wrong. I don't know. It's good. It's definitely worth your attention and play. It's an open world, but it's essentially just a big island.
It's a
big open island. You're this dude out to kill the Mongols because he's murdered all the samurais. It's a weird concept because the whole thing wants you to do stealth for... You can either go... I'm doing this wrong already.
You are correct, 3X.
Yeah.
So I'm doing this wrong already. So it lets you play however you want. If you want to just walk up to the Mongols, challenge them, fight them, go. But there are certain points of the game where they make you do stealth elements, or if you want to do stealth all the time, you can. But then the story of it, like, doesn't want you to do stealth. It's very weird the way the story contrasts to what the actual game is and everything like that, but
is it the kind still of story a fun that... little...
It's like the your uncle is the top samurai, I don't know. He's like, but is it stabbing them in the back is for thieves and cowards, and you're like, well...
Guess what I'm gonna do.
Guess what I've been doing.
At least I'll be alive.
Yeah. But it's still a lot of fun. There's a lot of little things around the map to collect, things like bamboo and flowers and shit. And the bamboo and some of the stuff is good for upgrading like your arrow capacities or upgrading your throwing weapon capacities. You can get some generic thing just called supplies, which you need X amount of supplies to upgrade your armor and weapons. They're just all over the map and everything like that. Flowers, there's a lot of little things in the game that's solely for cosmetic purposes. And a lot of the side stuff you do in between quests really are kind of pointless. Because the only thing some of them are going to give you is cosmetic stuff as well. Like, you can sit down and do a haiku in this one area, and then you walk away with a headband.
Well, the environments are very pretty.
It's a beautiful game. And the combat is very smooth. It works really well. It's fast-paced. And the motions were... And the point of the game is where I got into a Mongol camp, stealthed in, and wiped them all out without them knowing I was there. It was incredibly fun. Like, picking out certain paths and using different weapons and things here and there to pick them off one by one. It was really fun, and it was very well executed. But at the end of the day, I'm running around these missions, and it's like, there's another fucking flower I gotta grab, because for some reason I want this color scheme for my armor. I have no idea why. Or, there's a lighthouse I have to go light. I don't know why. Or there's another bamboo stand I gotta go and chop down so I can up my resolve a little bit. Like, there's
You do have to have a lot of resolve. You have to.
You do. You do.
It does like levy a criticism at the games. Like, there's so many pointless things to do. I mean,
it's something to do.
It's a video game. It's like, in the grand scheme of things, it's all very pointless. We are whiling away our finite hours before the grave, pressing, making beeps and bloops.
All right, that's nice.
Hey, valid point, John.
So give me all the pointless things to do.
There was a lot of little things to do in this, and a lot of the quests, like a lot of the side quests, are pretty much, hey, here's this big thing that's going on in my life. Go murder these people. And it was really that over and over and over again, which is fine. At least I'm not, like, collecting 10 flowers to bring into this person, or now I have to go get somebody's sheep. It's pretty much just my family. I'm like, all right, let's go chop their head off. Let's do it. Like, it's...
Now you're speaking my language, though. Collect the flowers, herd the sheep. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
None of that stuff. It's just go murder these people. It really, there's a lot of little stories, and some of the side quests follow, you need to collect certain people to help you with the main quest, so you gotta do these other ones, and each of those characters have like 9 chapters of 9 quests that you do with them, and you get their story, and you help them with their thing and everything. There's a lot of depth going on with this game. It's a very deep game. It's very, very good. Just straight up.
But it's called Ghost of Tsushima, and then they shame you for being stealthy.
Yeah. I always thought it was really funny, because they bring it up constantly, like, cowards stab from behind, and be like, yeah, that's fine, but there's 30 of them and one of me, so I'm going to do that. Like, it's...
yeah.
But that's part of the story, and it's funny. But it's a great game. You definitely should try this one out, John.
We both know I won't.
Why won't you? This is an open world, go and explore, chop people's heads off. Come on. It's great. They give you a lot of...
guff.
Skill trees.
Oh.
There's a lot of skill trees. And by, like, you get these points and everything, like, you can... Each of your weapons have their own skill tree. It's not even a skill tree. It's, like, 3 abilities in there. And then you have... your stealth, and there's a bunch of abilities in stealth, and each of them have three little tiers to that one at least. And then there's like your weapon stances in combat. You can shift your stance to like stone, wind, water, and
fire.
And each of those are beneficial depending on what kind of enemy you're fighting. So you want to use sword stance against people wielding just a sword, water against people wielding a shield so you can break through their shield.
I thought that was going a different direction.
And, you know, things like that. And each of them water against
the guys with the super soakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then each of those have their own little thing, and then there's just so many little skill trees and everything. It's really good. I'm doing a bad job saying this game. It's a good game. People should play it.
Okay. So are you playing the one that came out in July of 2020, just simply called Ghost of Tsushima?
No, I'm doing the Director's Legends? Cut.
Oh, you're doing the Director's Cut.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Game of the Year edition.
It went on, it was the Director's Cut.
Is there a different Game of the Year edition?
I have no idea.
There's one called Legends, and I don't know what that's about. There's maybe some DLC. Even a link to it. I don't know.
There is a DLC that was included with the Director's thing. Mm. I haven't done that. Because Elden Ring's a thing.
Mm.
Which is a much better game, but still,
it's not a competition.
It's not, but Ghost is still really good. Like, if you haven't gotten around to that one,
cool.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I did bad job.
No, you did fine. You're doing great.
Can I just on a quick aside? Bamboo is fucking terrible. Like, have you guys ever
like, just like material in
my,
general?
Yeah, my house in the backyard has bamboo, and that stuff is just the fucking worst.
Mm. The bamboo thing
grows
in the game
so fast, and it's like useless. Like, bugs don't even like it. Like, if you let a plant out there and you cut off a limb, it's like bugs are going to start doing shit to it. You cut down bamboo and they just couldn't give a fuck. There's zero nutrition.
You should,
there's nothing useful for this bamboo. It's technically a grass.
I have a use for you. In the game, there's bamboo stands where you set up bamboos and you have to do bun combinations. And if you do it fast enough, you get to cut through multiple stalks of bamboo. There you go.
Interesting.
So we're going to get you a samurai sword.
Actually, this reminds me of...
So you could practice cutting through bamboo.
Abel, I've already done that in the form of Skyward Sword.
Mm,
where there's that thing where you got to cut through the thing as it falls really fast.
You sure do.
Yeah.
You ever notice that there's like a point of diminishing returns, like how tough you are depending on like the size of your blade? So if you got a little switchblade, you're scrappy, you know. You're gonna defend yourself with that thing. If you got like a hunter's knife, you're like a sportsman or something. You're gonna like go out and like murder some animals. If you got a machete, you're a fucking war criminal.
Right.
If you own a sword, you're a dork.
That's true. Yeah. There's nothing worse than people that have collections of swords.
Right.
I have a wooden katana.
That's okay, I guess. That's like a practice sword.
Your brother brought me back.
Do you put it next to your little models?
Why do you always? Why?
The first time you shouldn't
anger him. He's not to be trifled with.
You had to slip that in.
You said the secret word.
Oh, jeez.
No, like the first time I said little models, I did not mean to be condescending. I know it's just a thing.
They are little.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll have to bring one so that we can see what they look like when you're done with them.
And then we can smash it in front of you. I've been playing Triangle. You got anything else about Ghost?
I butchered it and ruined it. Go.
Or swords or bamboo. Do we need to address anything else about these topics? Are we going to close the bamboo book?
Bamboo
forever?
It grows so fast.
Can't you just uproot it?
You try. No, the way that
could
it works,
you just get a panda?
It's like,
I mean,
what it does is it grows like probably 8 to 12 inches underground, and then it just goes along in a straight line, and then maybe every like 2 or 3 feet a vertical shoot will come up. And I kid you not, give it 2 or 3 days from the point that it breaks the surface of the ground, it'll be about 4 feet tall.
So you pretty much just watch it grow.
It grows so fucking fast. It's crazy. And it doesn't do that all the time, but like every couple of months, it'll do another thing where it spreads out and grows
up. Is it going to hit like a top height? Like, what if you just leave it alone? Is your tallest backyard going to be bamboo?
Stand by. And his backyard. His backyard.
Yeah, his backyard.
Yeah, my backyard has like the tallest ones were probably about 20 feet.
God.
And granted, they don't weigh anything, too. That's the other thing, because there's just, again, there's zero value to this plant. There's no nutrition in it. Bugs won't eat it. Like, it's just there to be obnoxious and to spread like crazy.
Well, you can use it to repair your house if it ever gets damaged. Just...
Is that a thing?
No.
I mean, it actually is pretty sturdy. Like, I could imagine if you did tie it all up, you could make... And you had it nice and, like, tightly wound.
You could make a raft.
Yeah, you can make a something on the ground to stand on instead of like pavers and shit. But like again, it's just it would eventually crumble, and then you would step on it, and if you had a bare foot, a shard of it would go into your foot. You know, it's like the stuff's the worst, man. I tell you, I've been working very hard to get rid of it, so that's why I say this. And yeah, digging up, detrenching it or whatever, digging it up out of the ground is
rough. I'm gonna Google what can you do with bamboo. Just
again, I'm sure it has a lot of purposes. Again, you might as well treat it like it's PVC pipe.
Hmm.
Oh, and that's the other thing is that every like foot or so, it closes itself off, so you can't. You'd have to drill a hole somehow down the middle of it if you actually wanted to make a tube out of it to do something like that with. Ugh. You were gonna talk about something.
Triangle Strategy.
Yes.
So. Triangle Strategy came out at time of recording here about 6 days ago. I'm about 14 hours in, so just some quick thoughts on what I think of it so far. It's
so
good.
You read the intro dialogue and you've named your character.
I've read the intro dialogue. You don't get to name your characters, no. But yeah, I've gotten through all like the intro story stuff. But yeah, there
took
is,
that from you, did they?
There's a lot of text. There's a lot of text. Thankfully, you can set it to like just auto, or you can skip everything if you feel like it. I haven't gotten to that point yet. But you can just also set it to like auto scroll, so it just kind of goes through on its own, so you can do something else and just let it do its thing, and it'll tell you when it's ready to actually get to some gameplay. And there's like a lot of side text, like I suppose maybe Fire Emblem is the closest touch point, but you know, in a Fire Emblem, when there are characters who you've had interacting like or fighting next to each other in battle. So many times they'll have like a conversation with each other and increase their sort of stat aptitudes when they're fighting next to each other in battle. They have these support conversations. Those sort of things also exist in Triangle Strategy, except it'll give like backstory on different characters who you fought with for several battles.
So they're not talking about like what their favorite pizza topping is.
Right, they're not doing that, which, you know, might be more interesting, yeah. But... No, it's more about like how it is they came to be involved in this war that's going on, but it doesn't seem to affect how they perform in battle together. It's just like backstory that you can engage with if you want to. You know, there are a bunch of other things like there are like you can just focus on the main critical path story if you want to, but like during every mission phase, you can also like. Just view like side story stuff that's happening in different regions of the world if you want to keep up with all the machinations of all the different factions involved. So just like the basic setup, it plays pretty similar to Three Houses, and like there's three factions in the world, and you're basically playing as like the Golden Deer faction in Fire Emblem terms, where it's kind of like this loose confederation of like these noble houses that get basically invaded. And I don't know, like, I'm a first playthrough, so I obviously don't know how things play out if you make different decisions, but even very early on they ask you to make these choices that will then affect the sort of path of the game. And I haven't really peeked far ahead at anything, but I did see like a quick video clip where someone was showing basically like a grid or a timeline with all these different nodes, kind of like Radiant Historia, where it's like showing you like all the crucial points and how they could branch off. So there are definitely a lot of different branching elements, and that will do things like affect the playable characters that you can recruit. And there are a lot of playable characters you recruit. I am in, like I said, I'm 14 hours in. I'm in chapter 8 out of 20-ish. There's 20-ish chapters in the entire game. And I have... 19 or 20 characters that I've recruited to this point. And in most missions, you're taking a dozen, maybe 13. So, you know, you do get a lot of use out of some of them. And it's not like a Final Fantasy Tactics or a Tactics Advance where, you know, you have this job system where you mix and match and can combine skills and make these overpowered characters. It's more about the construction of your group as a whole. So everyone's got like their character classes. You know, you have your main dude, he's a sword fighter, and then you have your paladin character, you have your, you know, your Pegasus knight, so to speak, in Fire Emblem terms, where, you know, it's a ranged, you know, uses bows and has a hawk that she rides around, so she's got higher mobility.
That must be your favorite.
I do like this character, yeah. And I actually just also recruited a second archer, which is really cool. But he is not a winged archer. He's got lower mobility, but can attack from greater range. You know, similar to something like a Final Fantasy Tactics, your elevation in the fight matters. So if you're attacking from higher up down to a lower level, you're going to have higher accuracy, do more damage. So your positioning matters, not only like in your elevation, but also like the way you are facing. Attacking an enemy from the side or from behind are going to do more damage and get you a higher chance at a critical hit. And then if you have one character positioned in front of an enemy and you put another character around from to the back, as long as you have characters on opposite sides of an enemy character, when you attack with one, the other one will pitch in as well and do a little bit more chip damage. And the battles, a lot of the things you are doing are chip damage outside of like maybe some attacks that are using magic rather than physical attack. When you compare it to something like a Fire Emblem, you know, early on in a Fire Emblem, it might take you like a couple of turns to dispatch an enemy. But as you build momentum and build out your characters, a lot of fights, you know, enemies that are coming at you are just fodder. Where they're, you know, going up against your tank character and maybe they survive, they probably don't. But you're not having to deal with too many enemies for multiple turns. Whereas in Triangle Strategy, there are enemies who are going to take multiple turns in order for you to finally finish them off. So you're at this point, I don't feel like I have any character that's super overpowered. And the turns work differently. So like in a Fire Emblem, you're going to have your phase where you move all of your characters. In Triangle Strategy, it's more of like, here is the ranking of characters by pretty much their speed stat. And they are going to move in that order. So you might be able to move 7 or 8 of your characters before they move any of theirs if your speed stats are significantly higher. I've found, though, in a lot of fights, it's better to let them move first and let them come to you. And I think it's that way because they do absorb so much damage. It's rather than being super aggressive, it pays off to play more conservatively and find the ways to use the terrain to your advantage. So, you know, even though I have quite a few characters who are moving pretty fast, I end up waiting the first turn. And there is also an advantage to that. There are some characters who will get a skill like they'll heal themselves if they're idle for a turn. Or, like, every character, if they're idle for a turn, it will actually bump their next turn up a little bit. So, you know, if you neither, like, move or perform an action, you'll actually get a 20% bump up to your next turn. So, you can kind of finagle it that way if, you know, you want to wait, but also want to act a little bit sooner the next time. And it will also show you, like, the order that the enemies are going to move. And some missions will be like, hey, you got to win in this many turns. So being able to take out the enemies quicker to eliminate their turn entirely is to your advantage. So you end up positioning your units to where your faster ones are taking out their faster ones first. But, you know, I really like that there are all these different character classes. It really makes it fun to mix and match what sort of units you're taking into a fight. There's like the classes you would expect. Like there's it's just a tank character. He hits guys with a shield. He's able to absorb a lot of damage. He's also able to provoke enemies to get them to focus on him and also inflict like a berserk status on an enemy. There is a character who is a blacksmith who I recruited, and this blacksmith character can craft things in the battle, such as like if there's All your characters will basically have like a jump stat in quotes. It'll determine like how much elevation they can move up. That won't like detract too much from their overall mobility. The amount of spaces they can move. Obviously, winged units are better at moving vertically than other units. But what this blacksmith character can do is he can actually just construct a ladder on the battlefield to move up to a higher elevation or move down from a higher elevation without screwing up too much of your mobility. He can also set traps, which is fun because basically like set up a spring-loaded platform on the ground, which the enemy can't see, and you can kind of like draw them into these, and what they'll do is they'll knock them back. It'll knock them back 5-6 space or whatever, and it can, it will also do damage. It'll do a little bit of chip damage, but if you trap an enemy and knock them over into other enemies, they'll all take some chip damage, which is fun. There are also some opportunities where you get to, you know, set a trap and knock some enemies like into some water, and they'll take some, or onto some lower elevation, or like into a pit of fire that's been ignited on the field. You can do a lot of fun things with these chap. I like this character a lot. There's also a character who's just kind of focused on buffs to your characters. There's a bunch of different mage characters. One of the characters you get early on is a fire mage. There's also an ice mage. There's a mage that, you know, has wind magic, but also some healing magic that I encountered. There's a shaman character who, she has like wind magic as well as like electrical magic. So they're not like completely locked into, if you use fire, you have to use fire. You'll never use anything else. There are some characters who can do multiple things. There's a character who I encountered who is a juggler. And
Kennedy.
Yeah, and she can create a decoy, like in Pokemon, like a substitute.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and like you don't have any control over it, but it'll move around. It'll draw a lot of aggro. And actually, it has a decent amount of HP, so it's like a good little piece of cannon fodder you can throw out there just to take out some damage. But it will also like move around and attack things, and it doesn't do much damage. And actually, would be pretty infuriating if it got the kill and not like your regular characters, then just soak up experience. Experience can be, I guess, hard to come by is the way to phrase it. It scales like Pokemon does now, where if you're at a higher level than the enemy, you're not going to gain as much experience as you would if you were a lower level enemy killing, or your lower level character killing a higher level enemy. So they do give you like these skirmish missions that you can play through multiple times, but you know, if you're already at level 13 and you're fighting enemies who are level 10, you're not gaining much from that.
I remember there was one of the Tactics Advance games where you would get this one mission to do, and it was against one of those big turtle guys with a sword in its back. And it was like a 4-1, and all you had to do was go fight this thing. And it would be like probably 7 or 8 levels above you. But, you know, since it's 4-1, it's not so bad. But I remember what I would do is just get 3 healers or 3 people with healing moves, and then 1 tank. And I would just surround it on all 4 sides, and I would just make sure that everybody was healing and also hitting the big turtle guy in the middle, because the way that experience worked, it wasn't on kills, it was on hits.
Mm-hmm.
So you would just power level 4 guys like crazy fast, because again, that's how it worked. If something was the same level as you and you just hit it with a weapon, including your own teammates, mind you, but if you just hit it with a weapon, it would give you a scaling experience. So if you're level 10 and they're level 10, you get 10 towards 100.
Right.
But then if you were level like 11 and they were level 10, you'd get like 8. And
right.
And 6 and 4 and so on. So I remember I would do that.
It's also similar to that. It's also similar to what you're saying, where it's hit-based. So if you're just kind of doing damage, or if you're just like using a skill, like even like throwing down a trap or healing an ally will net you some experience, or doing a buff. So pretty much like any action you take will net you some experience.
But you can't have your mage go over there and like smack the tank with a wand or something.
Yeah, you could.
And
yeah.
Get a little experience for that.
Yeah, all characters do have some melee attack. And of course, like a mage, if they're carrying like a tome of fire magic.
Hit them with the book.
And yeah, they hit someone with the book. You're not going to do much damage.
And that would happen to me every once in a while, where I would forget that I had counter on somebody. So like they would be like 10 levels beneath them, and they would just go over there and smack the fighter with something, who would instantly counter and like slice them, kill them. I'd be like, oh, that was a bad idea.
one of the nice things, I suppose, is one of the nice things about the game, it's different from Fire Emblem in that there is no permadeath. As long as there are some missions where it says this character can't die. But most of the time, any mission, like if somebody dies, just kind of like disappear, and then they're back the next mission, so you just kind of keep going. Which, you know, if I get into a mission where it's an absolute bloodbath, which hasn't really happened at this point, but I've been playing pretty judiciously, where, you know, if I have a character that dies early in a mission, I was like, well, I totally fucked that up. I'm going to restart this. And also, like they lose the opportunity to gain more experience on that mission. So I don't really want to continue with this character who then may end up lagging behind the rest of my party. There was one mission where I lost like three or four out of a party of 10. It's this mission that, you know, you're totally outmatched. You have to defend this fort. And the objective is to clear all the enemies, but you keep getting hit with waves of enemies, enemy reinforcements. And there's also a character, the enemy commander in that fight, who is 4 or 5 levels higher than the rest of yours. And she's also a class change character. So there's a class change in this game, much like Fire Emblem, more Final Fantasy Tactics. So, you know, her stats are like plus 10 over the rest of you. And, you know, you probably could beat this mission without, like, taking heavy casualties. It would probably require a lot of grinding, which, as we've talked about, is taxing in this game. They give you a tactic to get out of this. So basically, like, you're defending your hometown, your home city in this game. You're on your own turf, and you have a secret weapon. And the secret weapon is there are these canals in your town. You can basically just fill them with combustible fluid and light your town on fire. And it's like segmented, so there are different points where you can do this and will destroy certain parts of the town. And, you know, I go into this mission, I was like, fuck you, I'm not going to destroy my own town. And early on, I'm like, this is going fine. I got my choke points here, I'm walled up, I'm good to go. And then they start spawning enemy reinforcements behind my lines. So I was like, fuck, everyone bail, everyone get the fuck out of here. I started like running back toward the gates, like, somebody get to the fucking bomb. And thankfully, I was able to maneuver it. I only lost 3 or 4 units, and the enemy commander was right within like the center of the conflagration when I set it off, and was able to take her out. And at that point, you know, I was still outnumbered, but I was able to like wall back up and let them come to me and play more defensively at that point. But yeah, so, and like it still comes up. Like, if I have to go into my town at any point in the game, those buildings that were in that spot, they're burned down. Like, they're gone. And like the citizens are standing outside, and like there's this kid like, you know, I'm really glad that I have food. I wish I had a house, though. Fuck you, kid. We were dying. People were dying.
What a whiner.
I know, right?
Spoil of shit.
Hey, if we let them do what they wanted to be, your head on a bike right
now. Meanwhile, like, okay, I'm going to go back inside my castle now. But yeah, so these skirmish missions, you can farm experience there. You can also like farm materials there, and these materials are things that you need to upgrade your characters. There's a skill tree, it's limited. There's maybe 15 nodes for that, but you know, you fill it like 5 at a time, and there's like, you, it requires increasing amount of resources to get the next one. It's going to be something like +5 to your physical attacks, plus whatever to your defense, maybe something to your luck. Every character is going to have like a different assortment of things that you can upgrade. And then you can also like upgrade their weapon class, and in addition to their character class, upgrading their weapon class will give you another segment of the tree, another like 5 nodes of things you can upgrade. So,
and each of your characters have this?
Each of your characters have this. It sounds more intimidating than it really is, because I'm in mission 8, and like my most upgraded characters, I've done 4, maybe 5 of the actual nodes. So it seems to be slow going, and like a lot of things, these things that I've upgraded is because I've like been grinding out materials to get this. So I don't know, maybe I'll hit a point in the game, like there's some that are purchasable. Maybe I'll get to a point in the game where they're more generous with the amount of materials they give out. You can pick these things up from like enemies. Enemies can drop materials, then you have to like go to that space where they were and actually pick them up. But, you know, getting them from these side missions and from actual missions, you know, it's pretty slow going. And, you know, and forget about it. If you're trying to upgrade everyone that's available to you, there are some characters I haven't upgraded anything at all because I don't really use them a whole lot, and just going to eat up more experience to upgrade the characters I want to use. But yeah, there's a lot to think about when you're choosing your party and how you want to approach any particular fight. Sometimes you'll start out like in an elevated area, so you want to take a lot of your archers or your magic users. But yeah, I'm liking it. I think this game is pretty good. A-okay in my book.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, you got a movie?
Actually, I got a topic to bring up. I don't know.
Do it.
A topic? Like a general topic?
Not like that. We're breaking news. A headline.
Okay.
I don't even know if you heard this, but it's a game we like, the Advance Wars games. I don't know if you heard. They got it delayed indefinitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Delayed yeah. indefinitely?
Right.
The narrative was pro-Russia.
Oh.
Because of the way they phrased it was because of like ongoing world events, they delayed it and they have not given an actual release date for it. You know, it is a game that sort of cartoonifies war.
Yes.
There is also like a character that's vaguely Russian. So
yeah, it's a good thing they did that.
I get it. I'm still mad about it though.
It's like, not Olaf.
It is Olaf, yeah. He's vaguely Russian. Huh. His name is Olaf, which I guess is like a Slavic name or something.
Is he just there with a big bottle of vodka?
No, but he's got a big old beard.
He looks like Santa Claus.
I have a beard. Does that make me Russian?
No, yours is like... yours is like...
Just kidding.
But no, when I heard about... I posted in the Discord group. I was not happy. There were... quite a few fucks dropped.
I mean,
I understand it.
I get why. Yeah. I just don't have to be happy about it.
No.
I'm not like mad at Nintendo or WayForward for delaying the game. I'm fucking mad at Russia for making this, creating a shitty situation for everyone, including me, who now has to wait to play Advance Wars.
There's more important things going on than you.
You're right. I agree. I'm still allowed to be mad though.
I mean, it's just a skin to the game, though. This game is no more different than Triangle Strategy, right? I mean, sure, there's game mechanics are slightly different, but it's the same fucking thing, right?
It's a war. It's still a war. The difference is
it's a battle tactics simulator.
The difference is Advance War is like more modern, use guns and tanks.
A novelty sort of way. These don't look or feel like actual weapons of war. I mean, it's sort of like it would be like if they said, "I'm afraid we can't release these ports of Metal Slug."
Mm.
I
think.
You didn't see that they did that as well.
Metal Slug Tactics.
Yep, that's it. It's delayed indefinitely.
You know,
they're actually coming out with a new one now. It's canceled.
I think like what you're saying, Ryan, is correct in that it's not supposed to be like an accurate portrayal. There are other games that revolve around war that are not being delayed. You know, whether or not it was the right, and you know, Nintendo will never say like why it was exactly. They'll kind of give the vague reason, like because of ongoing world events. We know what they're referring to. We'll never get clarification from them why they thought Advance Wars was in poor taste, but Triangle Strategy was okay. And Triangle Strategy was published by Square Enix, so Nintendo probably could have told them, hey, let's hold off on this, but for whatever reason they didn't.
It's the little tanks and guns. It's not the swords and magic. Mm. Nobody's going to see swords and magic and think about the war going on.
But Nintendo, what I'm saying is Nintendo will never come out and say, this is specifically why.
Yeah.
We'll never hear their exact reasoning.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like what the other words. I think there was like a Need for Speed princess chasing simulator that was supposed to be released a few weeks before Princess Di died.
That's so true.
That one made sense.
Right.
Can't have that one.
That Need for Speed Tunnel Pursuit. I remember that one.
That was a bad one. That was a bad one.
But yeah, it's a bummer.
It is.
It's a huge bummer.
That's tough.
I mean, now I'm like looking at the games coming out like. We might as well address it now. I'm going to address a little bit on the official show at the end of the month. But the House of the Dead remake is coming out in April.
Nice.
Which, you know, I was going to put it on the wish list. It's something that I was going to see, like watch the price on, wait for like the schedule to clear up. The schedule cleared up. I don't think the game looks particularly great. It kind of looks like butt, in my opinion. But, you know, it's a light gun shooter and it might be kind of fun.
Yeah.
And now I have time.
I really want that Typing of the Dead game.
You should give your attention to other games, like Horizon.
I could start Horizon.
There's Ghost of Tsushima, that's really good.
We both know I'm not going to play
it. I don't know why you wouldn't play that one, but you play Horizon. They're both open world exploration.
I'm not
stuff.
Saying it makes sense. I'm just saying, like, we both know. We both, like, this is like a Dark Souls situation. Like, I believe you when you say it's good. Come on.
At some point, you're playing Elden Ring. I'm bringing that over.
I am interested in Elden Ring, actually.
Yeah, it's, John, do you have $1.99 of disposable income?
I do.
All right, so Sly Spy is now on sale. It's normally $8. It's $1.99 on the Switch shop.
Oh, that's a steal.
I played this game at the Colonial Lanes bowling alley as a kid.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Fucking loved it. Game's great. You're a spy, and you get to like go around and shoot guns, and there's this part where you're riding on motorcycles,
and you're
on
a
train and stuff.
Yeah.
It's fantastic, yeah. Like, maybe after GoldenEye, it's the second best Bond game, and it's not even a Bond game.
Speaking of Sly, you know Sylvester Stallone's in his 70s?
Really?
God, yeah.
Oh, well, we can't talk about him because he made those Rambo films.
That was true.
Yeah.
Oh, so Phil Collins, too. Phil Collins is 71. He looks terrible.
That's rough.
Our buddy Kevin posted a picture of him in the Discord group. He looks like Emperor Kuzco is about to throw him out a window. He looks awful. Yeah. This poor guy, like, he's like human dryer lint. He's about to collapse.
Now I'm Googling it. I mean,
Phil Collins. Well, you could just look in the Discord group. But anyway.
Oh my God.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, that's rough. Ooh.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this poor guy. Like, he can't even play drums anymore without, like, having the sticks taped to his hands.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's in rough shape.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just took this moment to pick on Phil Collins for no reason.
What did he do to you?
Well, all his life essence was probably drained in the 80s from banging all of those hot women.
Mm.
Totally worth it.
To look like death at 71. Yeah, maybe.
I like that every album is an excuse for it. Like, every ex-wife is an excuse for an album for him.
Yeah.
It's like, he just marries to generate content for records.
I mean, isn't that what Taylor Swift does?
Yeah, kind of, except she doesn't put the ring on the finger.
You leave her alone. This is going to be another Britney situation in 2 decades. You don't want to be on the wrong side of this one.
That's fair. That's
I mean, she literally wrote a song, a hit song, about a house she bought. That's, like, what a great thing. Like, she could turn anything into it.
Wait, we should fucking hate that. Like, rich people singing about the houses they buy? We should despise this.
It's actually a really good song, though.
Okay,
yeah,
I believe you.
It's called Last Great American Dynasty is the name of the song. And it's about how the woman that owned the house before her life kind of mirrored hers in a weird way.
Mm.
Or at least that she saw some parallels within this woman who owned this house to herself.
There's some kind of creepy horror movie there. I don't know how, but there somewhere.
You know, probably a little bit. You know, I'm sure if she wanted to, she could make that happen.
So we got a teen pop stars. Have you heard any of the new Avril Lavigne?
I haven't, no. Is it good?
It's, yeah, it's got like a fun, like, angsty bop to it. It's like more like, I haven't heard a ton of Avril Lavigne, but it reminds me a lot of, you know, the debut album years and years ago back when we were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny listening to it because it is, like, it's super angsty. And, like, I think the album is called Love Sucks. And, like, it's like, yeah. fuck everything. And every relationship is a disaster. And I hate everyone. But it's got, like, a fun, like, tone to it. And, you know, I'm listening to it. And it is, like these very, like, almost teen-centric viewpoints. And, like, looking up Google, like, she's 37. Like,
yeah.
Singing about this, but you know what? Like, after, like, thinking about it, you're like, who the fuck am I to judge? You know what? You sing the songs you want to sing. Like, you're not writing it for 37-year-old white dudes.
Yeah,
exactly. Why the fuck do I care what you're singing about?
She's got a thing that she writes the songs about. It's like, whatever. I mean, should we begrudge a band for, like, writing songs, like a fantasy metal band about writing songs about dragons? We're like, fellas, dragons aren't real.
You shut the fuck up. Oh, what are you saying? You stop that.
You're trying to graft wings onto a lizard. Or something. No, but yeah, it's you see that a lot. It's like, they're expected to write a certain kind of song and they have to keep with it, you know, to an extent, or that's kind of what their sound is, or what they're what's expected. Like, what else is Avril Lavigne gonna write about? You know, I mean, this is kind of her jam. This is her wheelhouse. It's what she does. It's like, I mean, she's probably the same age as, maybe a little bit younger than her, but like Hayley Williams, the singer of Paramore, like, she's talked about how a lot of the songs that she wrote when she was younger, she hates the perspective she had as a kid. You know, she writes a lot of songs that are very much about vengeful breakup stuff and, like, kind of just, you know, just being an asshole. But those are some of her catchiest and most famous songs in Paramore. And she's like, I actually really feel bad that I wrote songs in which I was advertising that this is how you deal with romantic relationships. You know? But that's, I mean, I think that's what you do.
That's kind of like a healthy viewpoint, though. Like, if you, mm-hmm. like, look back at the things you did when you were 17, you're like, yeah, I was right on the money there. Like, no one's right on the money when they're 17. Sure. You shouldn't, like, look back and be proud of everything that you were doing then.
Oh, well.
But, yeah, I mean, I thought, I don't know, I've maybe listened to two-thirds of the total songs, and I thought it was
fun. I gotta give it a spin. I still haven't listened to it, and not liking Avril Lavigne. I think she's all right, so... Mm-hmm. You know,
A-okay in our book.
Yeah, for real. She's Canadian. I mean, the ceiling's high. Or sorry, the floor is high. Hmm. Like, your worst Canadian is still probably an okay enough person.
Bryan Adams.
Yeah, he's not so bad.
All right.
I don't know. He made the song for that Robin Hood movie, didn't he?
Oh yeah, he did.
So he's got that going for him.
Yeah, Prince of Thieves, best Robin Hood.
Better man than Kevin Costner, that's for sure.
Hell yeah. Could you get? Wait, is Christian Slater, is he Canadian?
Ooh, he might. No, meh. You think he could. He's very pale as an individual. And he's got the face that says, I'm Canadian, but...
Yeah.
You know?
I'm just thinking, like, could you get, like, a more, like, American cast to do a Robin Hood movie than they did in Prince of Thieves?
I'm going to find this out if you could just hold tight for two seconds here.
Yeah, we're saying bye. Because you got Kevin Costner, Christian Slater, Morgan Freeman.
Born in New York City.
Okay, no, he's American.
Get that. He's 52. A little older than you'd have thought, but not that old.
No.
So he's still got it going. He could play drums if he needed to. Not only Phil Collins.
Wes, tell me about Elden Ring.
I'll throw up this Phil Collins stuff. Elden Ring. Yeah, it's a Dark Souls that had a baby with Breath of the Wild. Uh-huh. And boom, we got Elden Ring. And this is an open world Dark Souls and is the most open of open worlds I've seen. I haven't found an area I couldn't get to already. I'm sure there is a lot of areas I can't get to. The map is absolutely absurdly huge. Biggest thing I've ever... Oh, God. It's huge. But, yeah, it's just like any other Dark Souls games. You pick your starting class, but the only thing that matters there is what your starting stats and starting gear would be. But you can still put your points in whatever and use whatever as long as you hit the stat requirements for said weapon or spell. And then it just releases you out into the world. And Dark Souls has a Dark Souls is typically known for being brutal.
Masochistic.
They're just mean games.
Would you say it's a masochistic
has
game?
A what is the why? Why am I blanking on that word? Whatever. But usually in Dark Souls games, they would give you like some basic tutorials in the beginning of the game. They're like, this button is this, and this button does that, and that's pretty much it. With this one, they're really giving you a few more things because they're changing it up. Like, it's the first time you pick up a plant.
Casual!
First time you pick up a plant, it pops up, hey, there's item gathering and resource gatherings and stuff. First time you use a bonfire, like, hey, here's this.
So casual.
It's mm-hmm. But there's so many like little things that you just don't see in this game. It's... Mitch and I did this so much better. I suck at these mini shows.
No, you're doing great.
I'm doing great.
You're doing awesome.
The bosses in this game have really stepped up a notch. Like, boss one of Dark Souls 3 was this big thing named Vort. It was this big fat knight with a mace. And maybe a try or two, and I beat him for the first time. The first boss of this game is called Margit. And that thing took me at least 14 tries. And he was absolutely brutal.
If the game is open, how is there a first boss?
Because there is still a main path to go,
okay.
To go with the story. But you can still roam around and do whatever you want. And you gotta be careful too, because there's certain areas where you're just gonna wander into a field boss. Like if you're gonna wander into this lake a little too far, all of a sudden this dragon drops on you and torches you and you're dead.
Here's a Lynel. Here's a Hynox.
Yeah, except on a much shorter level. The first actual enemy you see in the game is this knight on a horse, and that's a field boss. You don't want to fight him. He is far... I still haven't beaten him.
Yeah, you do.
I haven't gone back and done that.
You want to fight him.
I do, but not out of the game. You're
going to get him first try.
Yeah, first try.
You got this.
But there's a lot of little things like that. There's a lot of little caves or crypts or anything like that. They're very small, like a room or two, and then boom, there's a little boss. And some of them are pretty tricky and everything that I fought so far. One was this assassin that did a lot of jumps around and slashes. one of those werewolf guy that did a lot of wide attacks and jumps and stuff. And there's just a lot of little bosses, which is really cool because you got your main bosses that have the gigantic health bars that are hitting you really hard and you had to beat them for the story. And then you got all these little bosses sprinkled throughout the map everywhere you go. And the game really rewards you for exploration because you're going to find these things and they're always going to have some kind of weapon or an item or something for beating them. Or it's always pays off to go, what's that ruin over there? You're going to find some stuff there. And they do this interesting thing as well where the first ruin I went to, I found a basement. I went down into the basement and there's some rats, killed off the rats, and I went to the back of there and there was a chest. I'm like, oh good, a chest. I popped it open, smoke popped out, and transported me across the map to this completely different area.
I've heard of this.
The enemies are far too strong for me to fight. I'm level 1. I haven't even found the area I need to go to unlock leveling up in the game. You have to unlock that.
Everything I've heard about this game, I'm pretty sure From Software hates people who play video games.
I don't know who hurt this guy who made this. He's definitely... There's areas in the maps that are just covered in poison, and there's areas of maps that have this scarlet poison that's really mean.
But see, like, everything I've heard about this game, and, you know, there are the comparisons to Breath of the Wild. It kind of sounds like they're two sides of the same coin, where you're creating these experiences where that they want to reward you for exploring. They want to reward you for going off the beaten path, and they give you, like, a lot of interesting things to look at and do if you go off the beaten path. Breath of the Wild is very welcoming in that experience. Like, they're like, hey, we want you to go and see what's over here.
Oh, they do too, except they also go, we want you to go over here and die.
No, they well, Breath of the Wild, like, wants you to go someplace. So like, hey, we want you to come over here so you can see this really cool thing that we've built over here. From what I've heard about Elden Ring, it's like, we want you to go over here so we can punch your fucking face in.
Yep.
It's mean.
It's very mean.
Having a chest that just transports you to the opposite side of the map, that's mean. That is a mean thing to do. To an area where
the enemies there spew poison and have spellcasters that are invisible until you're almost on top of them. You're like, fuck. Mm. Like, it's a really just brutal game.
That makes you not want to open any more treasure chests ever.
It's fun, though. It was fun. And the really mean thing about that particular treasure chest is it spawned me in a mine. Where I didn't know where the entrance was, and if I didn't get out of there quick enough, there was this weird centipede thing that spit silk at me.
Oh, horrifying.
And I couldn't fast travel because I was underground in a mine. Nice. So I'm level 1. No, I got nothing. I'm starting gear, and I'm against enemies that are far too strong. I'm like, shit. You just end up booking it. You're just run save? For the hills.
Can you just, like, save whenever you want?
It auto-saves. This game does not do save states or anything like that. Save. If you stop and make your own save file, whenever you reload into it, it continues from there and pretty much auto-saves. So the game doesn't let you undo mistakes. It makes you live with your mistakes.
So you could just be like, here's a chest. I don't know if this is going to be a mimic or something bad's going to happen.
So in that situation, it was, I figure my way out of this or I start a new game file. Mm. Which it wasn't that tough. I just ran by the enemies, got out the mine, and eventually I was able to fast travel again.
But if you die, do you like respawn at that fast travel point?
Wherever you die, when you die, you go back to one of two locations. Either what they call this points of grace or something like that, or things of grace,
or back to the store to return the game. This is one of the two places.
No, the other point is this was really cool because it's an open world. They really littered these little, I call them bonfires because that's what they were in Dark Souls. They're just bonfires, rest points. And when you rest here, you fully heal, you refill your flask, which is your healing item, and all the enemies that you kill respawn. So you can go and hack them off again or anything like that. But in this game, since it's an open world, they scatter a lot of them around, but also there's these little statues. And if you pass one of these statues, when you die, you can choose to spawn back at that statue. So you don't have to go all the way back to the grace. You can still stay in the general area that you are and you're working on, which is really beneficial. The game, Dark Souls in the past, certain bosses were really mean just because if you died, you have to then trudge across this castle again and go through all this fodder again to get to the boss. where you may die again and have to do this over and over again. In this one, so far, the two main story bosses that I fought, there was a bonfire literally right outside their door.
There you go.
So you just hop right into the boss fight.
They're learning.
They're littering this around, which is really nice. There's a lot of rest spots and everything here and there with it. But it's a very great looking game. Because I'm playing it on the PS4, it's having some of those things that you were griping about Arceus with. Like in the distance, like the flying bat didn't look right or simply just didn't spawn. You can't really see it.
Some bad frame rate issues.
But I mean, it's a PS5 game that they had to kind of slow down a bit for the 4. There was a couple things here and there with it, like when you're just sliding through the viewpoints, just toggling around or rotating the camera, it doesn't go that smooth, kind of ticks a little here and there.
Some clipping.
A little bit, but overall, it still works well on the PS4. I'm not having that hard of a time with it. There's a ton of weapons in this. They really just littered you with weapons in this, opposed to the other Dark Souls games, which still had a ton. And they made them even more customizable because each of your weapons have their own weapon arts. Now you can change those weapon arts. There's you can change what type of thing you can do by finding certain items. So like my weapon, I can change like if it's a quality or a keen or a heavy, which will adjust like its damage a bit. Like it's got to scale off my strength opposed to this or do this and that. So there's a lot of customization you can do with stuff like that. There's so much to do in this game. It is absolutely absurd. I've never seen a game on this scale. And they did it so nicely, and it flows really well. Everything you see in the game, like the castle off in the distance, you can get there. You're gonna go in there, you're gonna explore, and something's gonna want to eat you.
Is there climbing?
Yes, but they added a jump.
Okay.
So Dark Souls, the jump in them has always been like double tap your jump button, or you have to run and hit this other button to jump. In this one, they just gave you X. You hit X, you can jump.
What a novel concept in a game.
You can't double jump unless you're on your horse.
Of course.
They gave you a horse, and the horse can double jump. So there you go, Ryan.
As horses do.
I know how much you're nice. Obsessed with double jumps.
You gotta have a double jumper. You're playing a good detective game.
Yeah, and the horse is also a detective, so.
Of course, yeah.
The horse makes it kind of... The horse is great in this because it... One, you could just summon it out of nowhere. You don't have to find your horse or call your horse and everything like that. And it makes it easier just to breeze by things you don't want to waste your time.
Horses are always great. Except in Shadow of the Colossus, where he's a piece of shit and that tragically dies.
Yeah.
Actually, no, the horse survives.
He lives.
Yeah.
But, man, just everything in this game just works so well together. I have a hard time finding things that I gripe about. Like some people are complaining that there is like there's this thing called summons you can do where you summon these little spirits. You can collect different things of ash to summon different kinds of spirits to help you. And they're saying that they make boss fights a little too easy because of that.
Then don't do it.
I think they're wonderful because these bosses are brutal. They're great little, like, here's these little spawns. Focus on them for a second while I heal after you chunked me for more than 3/4 of my health.
That's a weird thing to complain about. It's like, this mechanic that's optional makes things too easy. Then
don't use it.
Don't do it.
Don't use it. I will use summons and everything to get through a boss fight.
Remember,
no shame.
Like, remember when they let us turn off experience share in Pokemon? Those are the days.
You still have to do it. But there's great. There are a lot of fun ones. One's a giant jellyfish that spits poison.
Nice.
Why the fuck not?
Why not indeed? There's something like that in Xenoblade X.
This game is wonderful. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Mitch is like forever into it. He's like level 90 something. I'm level 30. Like it's
tell him to get a job. My God.
It's absurd. But yeah, you guys should listen to the pod Mitch and I put together.
I can't. You haven't sent me the file yet.
I will. We'll put it together and we'll post it.
Okay.
But it was an hour long on Elden Ring, and I feel like that wasn't long enough. We could have kept going. I decided just to clean it up at an hour. But
it looks good.
It's a great game. Oh, it's so good.
I'm excited to try it.
I can't wait to see how angry you get.
Well, you know...
it's so frustrating. The fights are so, like, adrenaline. And just...
I do want to get to it someday, but, you know. Xenoblade and Pokemon and Breath of the Wild 2, you know.
I just want to sit here and watch you struggle.
I'm going to be really good at this. And I'm going to beat that boss on the first try. You're like, how the fuck did you do that? I guess I'm just better at this than you are.
Played a game called Cuphead? Yes, it's Cuphead.
I don't know. Someone told me this. I don't know how true it is, but there is. I found an item in the game, and my coworker told me it was added to the game. It's an item that literally helps you fight the first boss. Hmm. It shackles him to the ground for like 7 seconds, and you can use it a couple of times. But then at some point, it's unusable in the fight, like after he gets to a certain health. But I think they added it. According to my coworker, they added it because the boss was so tough.
Hmm.
Which, I don't think that's right. But still, the fact that there's an item you can get to help you with the boss tells you...
This
guy is mean.
I'm saying gossip. That's not gospel. That's gossip.
That sounds like gossip. Gossip. But.
Well, it's like... these Dark Souls games have been around for like a decade.
Yeah.
This shouldn't really be news to anybody that these games are just intentionally mean and difficult.
Yeah.
Mm. They're great.
We got any more games? I don't have any more games.
Found on here.
I did finish off. I touched on it a little bit when we did the official. So there's that game Soul Cresta. I finished that one off. I don't know. I think like if you're looking for like a shooter, like a Galaga or something like that, there's much better options on the Switch. I know this game was bad, but it really is a bullet hell game. And if you're interested in a bullet hell game, I say go Ikaruga instead. I think it's more replayable. This one, like. On the normal difficulty level, there's so much stuff coming at you that it just gets frustrating. And, like, after you beat, like, the final boss and you have to do, like, this end game run where it, like, sends you at warp speed through this obstacle course with not much broadcasting where the walls are that you're going to smash into. If you are really into these sort of shooter games and really into, like, doing high scores, you might get something out of it. But, like, overall, I didn't really have all that great a time with it.
Ikaruga was so good.
Or like Ikaruga. It's a good game. And like in this Soul Cresta game, as far as I can tell, doesn't even have like a co-op mode.
Which is unfortunate. Right.
I did find
it has to have a co-op mode. That seems silly.
I went digging through some menus to see if there was like anything I could find. I didn't find anything, but I did find something that I probably should have noticed a long time before. You can't just hold down the fire button to continuously fire because it was a charge-up shot. But there is a separate button. You can press the X button to just rapid fire, which made the last level much more tolerable because it's hectic and there's a lot going on. If you just kind of like hold down the one button, just focus on maneuvering around, it makes things much more simple to get through. But yeah, so that game, and especially like $40. Like, I don't like to complain about the price of games all that often, but... Like, I did not think that Little Nightmares 2 was really all that objectionable to be $40. You know, this Soul Cresta game at $40, like, nah, stick this on a wish list. Look for, like, a half-off sale, because unless you really, really love setting high scores, this is paper thin.
Yeah. And Sly Spy, $1.99.
I know, right?
Get it while it's hot.
That's exponentially more valuable.
Absolutely.
$2, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Ryan, you got a movie?
I do have a movie, yes. I watched Nightmare Alley. Have you guys heard of this
one? Oh, yeah. I saw that one.
Oh, you saw it too? Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. We can talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah.
It's really... I mean, you kind of see that this is going to be a rise and fall of an individual, Bradley Cooper, in this. Mm-hmm. And you don't really know where it's going or what the intentions are. And I like that it's kind of takes its time. It meanders around a little bit. It's like 2.5 hours long, which feels like kind of a long movie, but it didn't feel all that long because of how different the first half of the movie is compared to the second half of the movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you don't really feel the length of it like you do in some other 2.5 hour movies.
Yeah.
This is quite long. Like, it's not a superhero movie or anything like this. Right.
And then the premise being that, like, this guy is a drifter with a dark past who shows up to a carnival and picks up a job and learns the gift of the second sight, as he says himself, which is, you know, pretty funny.
What's the gift of the second sight?
He's just doing cold reading.
Yeah, he's good at reading people.
Oh.
And he's like, he enters this, like, romantic relationship with this other woman who works at the carnival.
Yes.
And they kind of work as a team. They both learn this craft of, like, her broadcasting, what sorts of things he should be trying to surmise or induce about the people he's trying to give, like, these psychic readings to.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of interact with all of these other low-level magicians, I guess you could say, people that have also done these things where it almost seems superhuman but isn't. You know, they've just kind of perfected the craft. Like, one of whom is essentially doing the same thing he does, except she's this upscale psychologist, or psychiatrist. You know, but she uses this platform of hers, which is nearly identical to what he does, to psychologically manipulate people as well. So you're kind of watching this guy with, is very, very morally ambiguous, kind of make these decisions, and you like him in a lot of ways, but then you also realize that he's truly a despicable person in a lot of ways as well.
And like, even from the start, like, he's a crook.
Yeah.
You know that he's swindling people. But people who kind of want to be swindled, like, they're signing up to see him do, like, these tricks and things. It's only, like...
Yeah,
The second half, once you get into the second or the third act of the movie where he starts doing things, like, well, you know, now it seems like you're trying to take advantage of people more than you already were. You're, like, directly trying to deceive someone rather than them signing up to come see your show.
And I think that, that is a really good way to look at it, too, because there is this sort of double-layered story in that, you know, you have someone that is directly in the dirt doing it, and then you have the onlookers, the gawkers, the people that pay money to see it, which is precisely what we, the viewer, are doing as we watch this film, reveling in the degradation of this guy, you know, who, again, we know to be appalling and to just be a kind of a terrible person. And that's what, like, they bring up, and I assume this is real to 1930s and 1940s carnivals, but they would have what they called a geek, which was basically like a man raised by wolves.
Yeah, a feral person.
A feral human, yeah, essentially, that would just do grotesque and disgusting acts, and is essentially kept as a prisoner within the circus. And everyone agrees that this person is just part of the act. And they do so by drugging them, essentially, by getting them addicted to drugs, that they slowly feed them so that they don't perform the act, they don't get the drug, and then they... you know, go into all of the horrible symptoms of withdrawal. So even the people that you kind of think should be good, like the Rooney Mara character, the woman that he seduces and kind of goes along with him on this act, even she seems to kind of just be cool with the fact that they do this at the circus.
Right.
It's one thing to have it's one thing to have people that are exploiting others with their talents or their gifts. But it's another to drug a person.
Right.
And then force them to do despicable things.
Bite the head off of a live chicken.
Yeah. That's like the opening thing. That's a nice little tone setter. A nice little here you go. This is what expect literal and figuratively this the whole movie. So it's good. And it's like Guillermo del Toro directed it. Like, man, he's a good director. And I love that he just doesn't. You know, he's not making sequels or doing, like, I'm going to make another movie about a guy that's a fish.
Pan's Labyrinth 2.
Right? Yeah. It's like he has all of these genius ideas for narratives. What a cool story. Like, if this was a book, it would have been a great read.
I think,
like,
this is a remake.
Just a good story.
I think there's a remake.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. I think it was from from the 40s or something.
Yeah, but I think... he did show quite a bit of, like, restraint, where he had this opportunity to, like, go down, like, this really, like, ghoulish, grotesque route where he's showing you, like, this is, like, stuff from, like, Pan's Labyrinth and stuff. Something that's, like, really interesting, like fantasy ghoulish. But, you know, he was in a circus. He could have tried to gross us out or make us feel uncomfortable with, like, these different sort of character designs, but he didn't.
Yeah. That's true.
But, yeah. I the one thing... did you watch this movie in color or black and white?
In color.
Okay.
So if you can choose?
I don't know. Like, at the time when I saw it, I could not choose. I didn't realize
it was black. Did you see black and white or did you see color?
No, I watched it in color.
Okay, yeah, because for a while there, it was circulating in theaters initially in color, and then towards, like, the last month of it, I think it was black and white.
Okay.
And I missed both showings, so I had I didn't get the in-theater experience. But, you know, whatever. I was really pleasantly surprised by this one. I thought this was good. I didn't know what to expect.
I didn't know what the general setup was either going. I kind of went in blind to it. I think, like, if I were to levy any sort of complaint, is the sort of turn at the end with Kate Blanchett. I don't know if it was, like, entirely properly set up. I think that where her character ends up going, I think, fits within the, like, the logic of the movie, where they're all a bunch of swindlers trying to swindle each other. I just don't know that the sort of relationship they were setting up between her and Bradley Cooper was well set up or well constructed. Yeah. That is such a small thing, though. Like, by that point, you're, like, fully invested in, like, what he is going to try to do to try to get out of the situation that he's in. That at that point didn't really make that much of an impact.
Yeah. And I think it is that parallel that, like, you know, even though the movie ends with him, you know, literally signing up to be a geek himself.
Right.
That's literally...
makes his way back to the circus.
That's the arc that we saw from him with his relationship with Kate Blanchett, that she was doing the same thing these carnival barkers do when they're conscripting another geek into the circus. You know, she's preying on him. And again, he talks about that he doesn't drink. And, you know, she just gets... It's so bluntly obvious that, you know, she gets him to drink, gets him to kind of compromise himself.
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't know. Yeah, really good performances throughout. I liked it a lot. So
yeah, it was good.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a film.
Ooh.
I saw The French Dispatch.
Okay, is it good?
Yeah, Wes Anderson one.
Just like, we have a trailer up at work, not anymore, but just the trailer alone. I'm like, I don't know how to feel about it from the trailer.
I typically don't enjoy Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah.
There have been a few that I've liked. Wes Anderson, I think, is a very specific taste. And, you know, I don't think, like, that...
we talked about
he makes. I don't think he makes bad movies. I just think that there's, like, a dryness. There's, like, a static
nature. What else has he done? Because you know how I am.
Bottle Rocket.
Royal Tenenbaums.
Life Aquatic.
Darjeeling Limited.
Yeah.
Moonrise Kingdom. Moonrise Kingdom I liked.
He did a couple of stop motion ones. I think the Isle of Dogs.
Oh, Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah, that was real. I actually liked those stop motion movies more than his live action ones.
I saw parts of Fantastic Mr. Fox and I thought that was interesting. I seen parts of Life Aquatic. I thought that was the boring, just the dullest thing I've ever seen. Oh my God.
I think his, just for me personally, his style can be grating. It gets a little overbearing after a while with its cutesy kitschness. I mean, everything feels
but
kitsch.
But him. Very like, dry.
Yeah.
It's like, it's arid. It is a desert, the way that these characters are interacting with each other.
It's like watching a... No, this is probably the wrong analogy, but it's like watching a TV comedy, but they get rid of the laugh track, and it just doesn't feel right. You're like, something's off here. Like,
This
like,
was never really funny, was it?
Like, like...
But I think there are some genuine moments of humor within Wes Anderson movies. But like, just like the way like the cinematography is constructed, like it's very much like a portrait. Like you're watching things happening on a very static screen. There's a lot of like whip pans where, you know, the camera whips around over to the next thing. A lot of like medium shots, things that you don't really associate very often with like. Films that are more like kinetic or energetic or like motion pictures, everything what he's doing like could be like a stage play, like a really ornate stage play, and The French Dispatch is very much that as well, except French Dispatch is like three or four different stories that are all kind of like loosely connected through the general premise. General premise is there is a guy who was a magazine publisher called The French Dispatch, and he had all these different writers who did like these sort of different life interest stories for his magazine. And he dies, and it's kind of going through the different stories. It's narrating the different stories and giving like the visual presentation of what these writers are writing about for the last issue of this magazine. They're not connected by, you know, like any narrative elements that intersect, but they're connected in that they're all these human interest stories that are being published for this final issue of a magazine. And, you know, they're all very much like these typical Wes Anderson pieces where all the characters are quirky, and sometimes the characters are violent, but they're all going to interact with each other in these very dry ways. You know, if you've seen the Wes Anderson movie, you're not getting anything like super different here. So if you like Wes Anderson, then yeah, you'll probably like this too.
And this is like, this is a monster cast. Yeah. Well, you got to give him credit. Like, it takes a good director to be able to juggle this many actors doing different things.
A lot of these people work with Wes Anderson a lot.
Yeah. Edward Norton is in the cast, mm-hmm. which is great. And he's not portraying Owen Wilson.
He's just himself. I was trying to slip in that joke somewhere. You got me to it.
But yeah, like the cast is just absolutely nuts. Benicio del Toro, Adrian mm-hmm. Brody, Tilda Swinton, Bob Balawan. I like him a lot. He's really nice. Henry Winkler, Lois Smith. That's all within the first of four parts mm-hmm. of the movie. That's a quarter of the movie is those actors. Like, it just, it's wild.
Yeah.
So.
Indeed.
Provisions for the Manifesto.
Yeah. Oh, and the titles they saw feel so
the
very
private awesome. Dining room of the police commissioner.
You know, yeah. It's
it's very like up his own ass. I mean, that's
that one kid, Timothy Chalamet.
Saw him in there, yeah.
The kid from Dune.
Yeah. Another Best Picture nominee.
Get out of here, is it really?
I think so, yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
I still gotta watch this.
No, good for them.
I remember I looked over the list of the movies that were like the Best Picture nominees, and I'm like, what a weird set of films. It's like, and I'm glad that I've now seen
Nightmare Alley,
because that's also nominated. I'm like, okay, at least two of these movies I know are good.
Hmm.
Like, it's like one of them is that Will Smith movie where he's being like Serena Williams' dad.
Oh, sure.
King Richard.
Yeah. That's got nominated. A movie called Coda, which sounded interesting. I think it's about like deaf parents raising a kid or something.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If I saw all the movies, and you know, maybe I'd have some opinions about them. But again, it's just like with every passing year, the Oscars really just seems to lose its luster.
Hmm. Maybe it's us. I don't know.
Maybe we're just getting older and we just don't understand these darn kids. Maybe. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think the Oscars are marketing all the Gen Z kids who are now in their mid-20s. So,
oh, that's sad.
That's actually what somebody brought up with the most recent Super Bowl, like the ads during the Super Bowl, where it's like all of the retro like it used to be like when you would watch a Super Bowl ads, it'd be like some actor from the 70s or something, and it'd be like, oh, I don't even know who this guy is. And now it's like all of the young kids are like, who the fuck are these people? Because it's, you know, it's advertising things that we grew up with.
Who the hell is Edward Norton?
And it'd be like, what the fuck is Back to the Future or some shit, you know?
Well, to be fair, Back to the Future came out the year after I was born, so like, but in Back to the Future, like, I don't know. I don't know if like things are still like this because I don't have my finger on the pulse of the youths. But like, Back to the Future, you could still like catch or like watch and still be like within the zeitgeist as you're moving into the early 90s. And there are movies that, you know, of course, get like made in the mid 80s that are still part of like the zeitgeist as you move into the 90s. You know?
I wonder what the drop, like the expectation of how many movies someone has seen based on when they were born. You know, I feel like they should probably have seen 10 movies from the decade prior to when they were born, from the 10 years. There's just like 10 movies. You could say, you know, these are essential films. But then when you get a decade past that, you got to be like, you probably need to see 5 movies. And then after that, maybe a couple. Like, to just truly have a baseline finger on the pulse of the history of film.
Yeah.
Like, it's shitty for me. I've watched a dozen film noir movies from the 1930s. But it would be really shitty of me to be like, how have you not seen all of these movies? Why didn't you, in your early 20s, when you had all that unlimited time, sit there and start looking through the list of Carol Reed films?
Yeah, there's like any movie you probably should see is The Maltese Falcon. And then the rest of them, like, sure, if you want.
If you're going to watch a movie from the 30s, like, I mean, I don't know what you would watch. But at any rate, I feel like that we shouldn't expect anybody, you know, that's like 20 today to have any comprehension of anything that happened in the 80s. Like,
how have you not seen all of Orson Welles' films?
Right, like, maybe see Return of the Jedi or something. Mm. I don't know. Like, there are a handful of movies from the 80s that are probably worth revisiting, and I would actually say maybe Back to the Future is a good one. But,
like, and Red Dawn, probably?
Gremlins before Red Dawn. No, it's... Yeah, the expectation is that, you know, we just assume everyone knows all this shit we know.
Hmm.
I guess that's my point.
We used to do this. We used to like go through like we would pick a year and like these are the 10 movies you should have seen from this year. But I think you're right. Like at a point like maybe when you get into like the 60s and before, there might not be 10 movies every year that you should have seen.
Yeah. There will always be standout films that just stand the test of time that you should watch. I think a Kubrick film. Like Kubrick is really good about that, about all of his films are timeless.
Hitchcock,
another great example. It's worth seeing a handful of his movies, for sure, no matter what your interest is. He's one of the best storytellers.
I'm bad with names. What movies?
Psycho. Okay. Vertigo.
Vertigo, yeah. Rope. Lifeboat. Foreign Correspondent.
North by Northwest?
North by Northwest.
The Birds.
Yeah. Birds. He did that shit, man. Oof. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
Is that the one where the birds literally are killing people?
Right, but not Birdemic, right. Which was a movie that they did a riff tracks on that was really good. I watched a riff tracks recently that was by the same director who did Birdemic. They like follow his career now. Replicant also super good. Oh my goodness, like a couple of like a lot of these riff tracks, like sometimes they can be hit or miss, but there have been a few that I've watched recently, Birdemic and Replicant, they just knock it out of the park. They're really good.
A buddy of mine actually on his Plex account has over 100 of the ones that he synced up to like more modern films.
Okay.
Ones that you'd actually have to like just get the audio file and then watch it in sync with the movie, except he did the work of pairing the audio file to the film. Oh my god, they're so much fun.
Yeah,
they are just the funniest fucking things. Like, it's great. Like, he did at least in his library, among a million other movies in there, it's like over 100, but he's got like a good chunk of the Marvel films, the MCU stuff.
Nice.
Which is such a superior viewing of it, is watching these guys just trash what I don't know, they're really just
Well, no, I think that they are right for that sort of thing because, you know, they are inherently silly.
Yes.
Like, these are movies about people wearing big suits of armor and transforming into green monsters. These are silly.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of all the other, some other funnier ones. Like, the weird ones, like Alien and Jurassic Park are good just because they're such well-made films that it's kind of fun to see them.
Or something like a Blade Runner. Like, an Alien is probably, there's a lot of quiet space. Or space where there's not a lot of dialogue to interrupt. Yeah. It's not like an Alien.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think Amazon Prime has picked up a ton of their... Okay. They're more like free use stuff that they can do.
Public domain shit.
A lot of bad movies that they've covered over the years.
Yep. Anything else we need to cover?
I watched Peacemaker.
Oh, good.
I got 2 episodes left.
Not done yet.
Oh. It's definitely...
There's another thing that's just so silly.
What?
Oh, Peacemaker
in general?
Yeah.
It is over the top.
But it's James Gunn.
Yeah.
Nice. He's good.
Yeah. And I didn't read the article, but Google recommended articles. Like an interview with him about why he makes superhero movies about people who aren't really heroic, but they're psychopaths. And when you go back, and every time we talk about James Gunn, we reference the movie Super, which is a movie he did with Rainn Wilson before he did all these other superhero movies. And there's a guy who's psychotic and becomes a superhero. And like there has to be like a level of like narcissistic psychosis to make you want to put on a costume and beat the shit out of people.
Yeah.
Wait, you don't want to do that?
Not often.
Wow.
He made Slither, though. Slither's just a romp. That's a fun one.
Yeah, I could never bring myself to watch that. Like, just like the box art, the cover art, like the person in the tub. No, with just like the leeches, it fucking grosses me out.
It's silly. It's really silly and fun. It's gross, but it's also really, really fun.
Amazon Prime keeps saying, like, hey, you should watch The Fly. Like, I'm not going to fucking watch The Fly. Jeff, I know you're listening. I'm not going to watch The Fly. Stop.
The Fly is... I've been recently... Because I've seen that movie a bunch of times. I was recently thinking about it. There's this band there's this kind of cheesy scene band called Ice Nine Kills that recently made a record that I can't stop listening to. It's so fucking good. But it's called Welcome to Horrorwood 2. And every track is about a different horror film. And then every track is great. I'm really enjoying listening to it. And they cover things like Child's Play, There's a track about Resident Evil, one about American Psycho, one about the film Psycho, one about Hellraiser. But the one that really got to me that they did is about the film The Fly. And I went back and I rewatched The Fly just because it's like, you know, it's a good film. And it is so heartbreaking. Like, it's one thing to watch a horror film that, like, just murders a bunch of teenagers or something, where it's like, guy in the wood with the machete, like you're saying, that, you know, the most intimidating of all bladed weapons.
Right.
It's just in there hacking up douchebags, and you're seeing some tits along the way, and it's like, all right, that's fun. It's another to see the way that Cronenberg breaks down him as an individual. You know, the way that it's not Jean Triplehorn, who's the actress, so I'm trying to think of her name.
Anyway, I don't know.
But, like, the way that she is so invested in him, too. There's no bad guy. There's no bad guy. It's just hubris. It's the thing that brought him down. And it is so gruesome and so grotesque. And to have it be about someone you genuinely care about, someone you would love to see a happy ending for this guy, and knowing it just can't be. Like,
how does that movie end?
With her shooting his brains out with a double-barrel shotgun. Mm. While he is basically a pile of mush begging to be killed.
Oh.
It is rough. It is really, really sad. You know what, though? If you watch the first 45 minutes and stop right there, real uplifting thing. Basically, the guy becomes Spider-Man, and he gets to have a lot of great sex with his wife, and everything's awesome after that. It's good. His science project worked out really well. He got an A+. You know, it's...
End of movie.
End of movie.
Just skip to the end credits and imagine he's there holding a Nobel Peace Prize.
Precisely. So, yeah. I would recommend... Yeah, you should watch The Fly. Watch The Fly and watch Slither. It's body horror. Yeah, that's
no, the I was thinking, like,
people don't like body horror, but...
No, I do not like body horror.
I don't know. That's going to be a no.
Have you guys seen Hellraiser?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that too gruesome? Was that okay?
It got a little queasy.
A little queasy.
A little bit gross.
What about... Okay, can we revisit Hannibal? Was any of that really that bad?
Not, like, compared to some other, like, body horror stuff. I think, like...
Being flayed alive above the optical table?
Oh, yeah, that did happen in the fucking Event Horizon.
Event Horizon, that's so what
I
it was.
I think the difference is, like, in Hannibal or in Event Horizon, it's not, like, really, like, this sort of, like, transformative thing that's happening. Like, the body...
You're not watching it happen.
Well, and it's not, like, there was an act of violence that led to this horrific thing that happened. There's a sort of, like, disconnect. Where, you know, it's something like The Fly, is like there's like something is out of control and can't be stopped.
No.
Anyway, Our Flag Means Death is much more uplifting and
and
lighthearted.
Yeah, I watched a bit of it. That was fun.
Yeah, we watched the first episode before Ryan.
That was goofy.
Yeah, that show is silly.
Yeah, cats are terrifying. They have mouths full of knives.
That's a new show on HBO. This sort of like rich guy who's lived a very pampered life, also suffered some trauma through some emotional abuse, decides to just upend his entire life and hit the high seas, buy himself a boat, and form a crew of pirates and just sort of go out and like pillage. And of course, it like starts out like he's not good at it. He hasn't really robbed anybody, even like at a certain point. Like,
no, he took that pot with the plant. He
took the potted plant from the fisherman who were on the tiny boat.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, things go off the rails quite quickly. But like a lot of the fun of the show comes from like the crew who are these sort of illiterate pirates. A lot of them are very dim-witted as well. But there are a couple of crew members who are kind of capable. But... them trying to deal with the fact that he's not like this cutthroat, you know, brigand that they were expecting to get out of a captain.
He reads them stories at bedtime.
Right. And he does the voices. Come
on.
We'll never know if the wooden puppet boy became real. But yeah, it's that sort of tone. And like it's, I don't know, more enlightened. Like, in the way that he's treating his crew, than you would expect of like a 17th century a naval captain. He wants them to like express their feelings and talk about like the things that they're going through. He has them do arts and crafts to make a flag for their pirate ship.
Did you say when is this set? Is this like a modern day thing?
18th century.
Yeah. Oh, okay. 18th
yeah. century. So, something like that. Yeah. So you know they're like they have a bump in with the British Royal Navy, who are very intimidating at that point in time. It's like
not in the show, but in history.
Right. He's just like some fucking frat guy who bumps into his old school friend who he used to bully. But yeah, good show. I like that one.
Yeah. Nice. I'm definitely going to keep watching that one after Peacemaker. I got two more episodes.
That one is good. And you watch like the opening dance every time, right? You don't
every time. You never, do not skip that.
You never skip.
That song is wonderful.
Yeah, it's great.
Everything about that intro. Have you watched any of the show?
No.
You need to watch this just for the intro alone.
Yeah.
Just fuck. Yeah. So good.
What a great like opening song.
His best friend's an eagle.
And it gives him a hug.
That was the best part. In the six episodes I've watched, that was my favorite part, was the hug from the eagle. Fuck, that was amazing.
Yeah, what a great show.
Get my phone and my picture.
So yeah, anything else we need to address before we close it out here? We're getting pretty near the end.
Yeah.
Next up is the retro show. Oh, we got a lot to get to.
Yeah, we got how many? 40 or 45 minutes of music this time.
I've actually got a whole chunk of albums that I literally have one sentence to say about them, and we can move on.
We're so. Streamlined? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it'll be quick.
I give you a hard time, but it's fine.
Yeah, I've watched one movie so far. I'm going to watch another one of them real too. I don't remember what all there was, but I watched a movie called Heartbreakers.
Okay.
And I want to see Memento still. So
I've seen Memento a number of times. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of ones that I have on tap to watch as well, so we'll have a bunch of movies to talk about, but like there's quite a few games to get through.
Tons of games. Oh my god.
Like I don't think there's any Game Boy games. I'll have to double check.
There's like a couple N64 games too,
but yeah, Conker's Bad Fur Day, Pokemon Stadium 2.
Yeah.
There's one more that's gaming. There's like three N64 games, and then you know we'll have an N64 we can talk about in April and May, and then the N64 is dead.
I feel like that was quick. I feel like we haven't been talking about the N64 very long.
5 years.
Have we?
Yeah. Yeah. Time has no meaning anymore because we're in the after times. So, you know, N64, you know, it had a normal lifespan for a game console at the time.
We haven't been doing the Nintendo 64, so to speak, for 5 years.
We have. It'll be 5 years in September.
I feel like maybe 2 years ago we did this.
No. We've gone through the entire lifespan.
We did this for years at your old house.
Yes.
That's how long it's been.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Wes is feeling his own mortality right now. But, I mean, and I guess we'll kind of save this conversation for the retro show. But
well, other consoles were picking up,
right?
It's we can carry a few months of talking about what was going on with PC games. PlayStation 2 was a big thing. The Dreamcast was still alive.
Game Boy Advance is coming.
Game Boy Advance, yeah. So we got there's content for games, certainly much less like fucking movies and music. There's a lot happening.
And I keep saying it, but there are other Game Boy Color games that we're going to address before we close the book on that system. We still got the Legend of Zelda Oracle games. We still got Pokemon Crystal,
yeah.
are the heavy hitters. So you know, they're still games, but you know, the N64 is kind of like unceremoniously exiting.
Are we going to go back and complete the list? The rankings?
No. God.
We're not doing it?
No, we'd have like 30 games to add to it at this point.
Yeah, we're pretty behind on that.
I didn't tell y'all, because of our retro show, I nailed the winning question on trivia last
night. Oh, shit. What was the question?
Yeah, our team won. It was great. But it was name these four historical events and place them in order from oldest to newest. And they were, if I remember correctly, it was the...
Don't say them in order. See if I can do it.
I won't say them in order, and we'll see if you can do it.
I won't.
You got this. The death of Princess Diana, which is probably why I brought it up earlier. It's top of the mind. The death of Princess Diana. The Challenger explosion.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was the release of the film Toy Story, and when Wikipedia first started.
Nice.
And I knew it was January 2001.
Okay, because we just did it.
And we just talked about it. And, like, everyone at the table was like, the fuck? Because everyone had a... We all felt pretty comfortable. Like, I mean, what do you think the order... Do you remember that order of those?
I think it was pretty much in the order you listed it. Was it Diana, Challenger, Toy Story, Wikipedia?
I think Challenger would have been first.
Yeah?
Yeah, the earliest.
No, again, there were two shuttle explosions. I hope I'm not saying the wrong one. There was shuttle explosion in the 80s.
I think that was Challenger.
Is that Challenger?
Maybe Endeavor was the other one.
There was one in the early 2000s. Sorry for getting that wrong, but yeah. So the order was Toy Story was the oldest event.
Remember when we went to space?
Good news, Princess Di got to see Toy Story before she was murdered.
She deserved to.
Yeah, because
then... See Toy Story.
Yeah. I was about to say, God, shit!
January 2001, Wikipedia, and then lastly was the...
Wikipedia.
I think it was Columbia.
Columbia, thank you. It's the Columbia was the... And then they exploded, apparently it...
Yeah, on re-entry.
Yeah.
Whereas so, I think Challenger exploded before it launched.
Yeah, on the way up. But that was the one that had the teacher on it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was, I believe, Toy Story was 96, Princess Di was 97.
Nope, not going to make that joke.
2001, but January 2001 was when Wikipedia, and then lastly, the...
Columbia.
Thank you, Columbia. It was 2003.
Well, I was way off on all of that, so, you know.
Yeah. So we did it. We took first place.
What was the prize?
$40.
Nice.
And drinks. Essentially bar bucks or, money for the restaurant.
That'll buy you like 10 chicken wings.
Something like that. Yeah, chicken wings are apparently very expensive right now.
Yeah, there's a shortage.
So. Yeah. I don't really care. I'm not crazy about chicken wings. If they're around, I'll eat them by the dozen. But I don't really go out of my way to get chicken
wings. Yeah, the same.
I like chicken wings.
You gotta be in a specific mood for chicken wings.
I suppose.
It's gotta be a sporting event.
It's gotta be teriyaki. With blue cheese.
I'm not on board with that.
No, you're on your own. You're on an island by yourself for that one, Wes.
I think you go buffalo, but minimum medium. It's got to be at least a medium heat.
Yep.
Anyone that's doing mild buffalo can just go fucking die.
You might as well be chewing a rubber glove.
Yep, bingo. And I'm cool. I think it was barbecue sauce or maybe like a spicy garlic sauce on it. It's fine.
I think we're on the same page. You either go minimum medium buffalo sauce or barbecue.
I like teriyaki. Oh, jerk. Okay. Jerk chicken.
Oh, yeah?
Like a jerk seasoning is always really good, too.
I don't think I've ever done that with a chicken wing.
No. It's worth it.
Okay.
Are we done?
Yeah, we're done here. The end.
So long.
Bye-bye. Thank you.